Do all the commissioners have their screens on?
Yes.
We are broadcasting and recording.
So we're ready?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we're ready.
Okay, good morning. My name is Dr. Kenneth Thurman. I'm the chair of the California Boating and Waterways Commission, and today I'll be chairing the Boating and Waterways Commission meeting. I call to order the August 12, 2021 commission meeting. This meeting is being held virtually on Zoom. CalSPAN live webcast. As a reminder to everyone, this meeting is a live webcast and can be viewed at www.calspan.org. The archive video will also be available at the calspan.org website. Before we get started on the reports today and the agenda items, please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Do we have a flag, Bob?
No, sorry, we don't have a flag.
No worries.
Okay, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you all very much. Now I'd like to ask Megan Russell to call the roll call for the commission.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Chair Ehrman. I'm going to go ahead and start the roll call, excuse me. So first up, Chair Kenneth Ehrman of Oxnard, California. Present. Commissioner Catherine Pettibone of Sacramento, California. Absent. Commissioner Peer of California.
Present.
Present. Commissioner Hawkins of Truckee, California.
Present.
Present. And Commissioner Murillo of Coronado, California, absent. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Megan. Introduction of commissioners, staff, and legal dignitaries. At this time, I'd like to introduce the local dignitaries from the Rock Creek Boat Launch Facility and Grant Project being presented today at the commission later in the meeting. Aaron Amaris, Civil Engineer, United States Department of Agriculture, representing the Forest Service. And Philip DeSens, District Ranger, United States Department of Agriculture, representing the Forest Service. Do either one of the dignitaries wish to speak?
You know, I am not sure if they are on right now. If they're calling in by phone, I like to remind them that *9 is to unmute their device. Or sorry, *9 is to raise their hand and *6 is to mute their device if they're calling in by phone and would like to say anything. So maybe we'll just wait a few seconds here. Okay, I'm not seeing them pop up. Chair Ehrman, but I believe they'll be speaking later when the grant project presents. Is that correct, Joe?
That should be correct. Did we send them the link to the meeting?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And they should be available later on.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, so now we'll move forward with State Parks Department of Waterway staff. Armando Quintero, Director of State Parks, is he on?
He is not on, but he may be joining later. So I'll let you know when he comes on.
And we have Ramona Fernandez, Acting Deputy Director of Boating and Waterways.
Good morning, everyone.
Catherine Tobias, Legal Counsel, Department of Parks and Recreation. Mayra Barajas, Deputy Director, Legislative Affairs.
I believe she is watching the meeting. So I would just like to remind attendees, we're also executive staff, you can raise your hand if you wish to say anything, but no pressure.
And I apologize, Chairman Ehrman, I'm here, Catherine Tobias. I was having trouble with my computer.
Great, thank you. And last, Gloria Sandoval, Deputy Director of Public Affairs.
Okay. Gloria, I believe you are unmuted.
Yes, good morning. Good morning to everybody, and I'm looking forward to today's meeting. And did I lose you guys?
No, we can hear you.
Oh, perfect. Looking forward to today's meeting and learning about how DPW is, you know, improving the resources to the recreational boating community. So looking forward to the meeting.
Great, thank you.
Chair Ehrman, I would just like to let you know that Commissioner Murillo has now joined. Good morning, Commissioner Murillo.
Can you hear us, Commissioner Murillo? Okay, so moving forward, next agenda item is the chairman's report. Just very briefly, I haven't had much chance to get out and interact with the community recently. I just wanted to make note, the other day I was in Sacramento and in the blistering heat, and I drove by the Discovery Park area, and I was just amazed how many people were out in the water utilizing the waterways. It was literally like a New York traffic jam with all the swimmers and boaters. And I think it just reinforces how vibrant the need for the boating and waterways is, how important it becomes almost like a haven for people. And like I said, it was really hot, and it was a weekday, and yet there was a tremendous amount of people out there enjoying it in an orderly fashion, lots of boats, lots of swimmers enjoying the area. So I always like to point out how vital the waterway area is to the to our constituents, and how important it is that we keep their needs in mind when we move forward with this. And I'll just leave it at that. So we'll move on to commissioners' updates and activities. And we will start with Tom Peer. Did you have something to report?
Yes, I did. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I actually had three items. First, I had the pleasure of spending a week down in Newport Beach. I had the honor of serving as an ocean lifeguard down there for about 5 years, maybe a couple of decades ago. And I met with the chief of the Newport Beach Lifeguard Department, Mr. Mike Halfi. They have about 200 lifeguards seasonal in the summertime, and then about another 20 that are full-time staff people. But he asked that I convey to the commissioners and as well staff his gratitude for the resources that the department or the division provides to the Newport Beach lifeguards in terms of training resources and so forth. So I wanted to convey that. And then secondly, I came across this article in the New York Times, which the headline simply says, booming interest in boating during the pandemic leads to more accidents. And these are national figures, but I'll just briefly go through them. As we've discussed previously, said new boat sales have reached a 13-year high in 2020. But accordingly, there's been a 25% increase in fatalities and another 25% increase in non-fatal injuries year over year since 2019. And it said, additionally, in 77% of fatal cases, and I should note that all these figures are national figures provided by the Coast Guard. In 77% of fatal cases, the boat operator had not received any training. So I think that the commission should be mindful I suppose you can kind of flip that and say, well, people who receive training are less likely to have fatalities. So the work that we do here at Division of Boating and Waterways seems to be having a positive effect on the outcome of the safety of the boating public. And then finally, the third item, Megan, did you have a chance to can we run that video? And
Yes, just, I have the video.
Just by way of introduction, and I mentioned this at our last meeting, the aquatic park pier here in San Francisco is, it's a well, I should say aquatic park. I was down there on Saturday. There were probably 100 people swimming off the beach. And that's in addition to the two swim clubs, the South End Rowing Club and the Dolphin Club. So the area gets a tremendous amount of activity. And the so-called municipal pier is in such a decrepit state that it's going to be, I don't know if they're going to be able to refurbish it or they're just going to have to simply replace it. And in fact, they've now put these signs along the side of the pier advising swimmers to not go anywhere near the pier because chunks of concrete are falling off. But most of that is a federal project, obviously. And the federal funding, I think they're working to secure it perhaps as part of the new infrastructure program. But what the community is doing is the so-called vision study. And the vision study is how to integrate that new pier with both aquatic park and also Fort Mason properties. I've been involved in that peripherally, and they created this video that I'd like to share with you.
Welcome to a special place in San Francisco called Aquatic Park. During the pandemic, we've all come to appreciate public open space, and there are few spots in this dense city that you can find such an immediate connection to nature and water. Led by the SF Maritime National Parks Association, we are working in partnership with a whole host of agencies in order to bring forth a unified vision for the future of this district. Please join us by engaging in the Aquatic Park and Pier Vision Study to help recreate this place. Where is Aquatic Park? Our site is one of several significant public open spaces along San Francisco's northern waterfront and includes land that is part of two national parks, Golden Gate National Recreation Area and San Francisco National Maritime Historical Park. The focus of our vision study is on making a place for connections, physical connections, cultural connections, and connections to the area's many layers of history. Our site is set on the ancestral lands of the Ramaytu Shoshone, the original peoples of the San Francisco Peninsula. Known as a Native American cultural site, it has also served as an industrial hive, military installation, and, since the WPA construction of Aquatic Park, a recreation wonderland. Tucked along the water amongst other major city landmarks, Aquatic Park can get lost. There's confusion surrounding its many names, and it can be challenging to get there and know where you are. There is so much to love about Aquatic Park as a signature destination in San Francisco, but it is not living up to its fullest potential. After years of disinvestment, and with the imminent threat of sea level rise, both Muni and Hyde Street piers are crumbling and need immediate investment for reconstruction. In addressing these challenges, there are also a number of opportunities for the park and its neighbors. Our vision study looks at how to recreate this place in a way that responds to the needs of today, takes advantage of potential federal funding for infrastructure, and respects the integrity and history of the site. Let's take a closer look at some different parts of the park. Jefferson Street is one of the primary ways you access the park, but it can be pretty disorienting. Could we make it more inviting and safer? How could we realign roads and pathways for people and cars to move through safely and clarify the path out to Hyde Street Pier, into the park, and beyond? Another entry point is at Van Ness, the border between Aquatic Park and Fort Mason, and a major barrier no matter which way you're coming from. What if we saw this becoming a gateway that welcomes you to the park and enhances the connection back to the city? Further down and into the park itself, it still isn't totally clear where to go. Can you connect to Upper Fort Mason or Fort Mason Center? We could look at ways to build on the recently completed terraces and create accessible options for pedestrians. Perhaps we could add other amenities to activate this plaza. At the end of Van Ness is Muni Pier. The pier is crumbling and the area where it meets the shore is muddled. As the pier is reconstructed, this entire area could be elevated to create better connections to the water and to the other parts of the park. Today, many people don't get past the base of the pier, but further out, the views are spectacular. So what can we do to bring more people out and give them something to do? Let's think about how the pier reconstruction could create new spaces for maritime recreation. We want to celebrate Aquatic Park and its iconic pier as the maritime heart of San Francisco. In realizing this vision, federal funding and public-private partnerships are both crucial. Now is the time to recreate this historic place to better connect to the city and reflect the voices of all San Franciscans and the entire Bay Area. This park is for you. We want to bring back the civic pride from when the pier was first constructed nearly 100 years ago, but we want to make it a place for our future generations as well. So please share your input. Tell us how you would recreate Aquatic Park.
Okay, well, that's my report. I thank the commission for your time and watching that video. I thought it was just very informative and gives a little more context, really, on the space that I'm obviously very fond of and which I think serves the public and the boating public very well.
Thank you, Commissioner Poole. And I would add that's an area that my family and I are very fond of, too. I've spent my entire life in that, walking around in that area, so that was really outstanding video. Commissioner Hawkins, did you have a report?
Yes, thank you, Chair Ehrman. Commissioner Hawkins here, representing the Sierra Nevada. So it's an honor to represent the rural communities of California. I first like to just start out and really give my thoughts and prayers to the folks that are affected by the Dixie Fire right now up in North County. A lot of folks are displaced and just want to our thoughts and well wishes with everyone that is being affected right now, and especially our gratitude towards the first responders. However, even though that here in the Sierra Nevada we are affected by wildfires and the AQI is horrible, people are still finding ways to recreate and get outside and enjoy our waterways of California. So my report since our last meeting is I've been in the Sierra Nevada, I've been in Plumas County and have seen firsthand all the people that are getting out and enjoying access to our waterways within the state. Here locally in Truckee, the Donner Lake State Park is capacity every day. People continue to enjoy this resource, people from residents, community members to visitors, you know, folks from the San Francisco Bay Area, Sacramento, and even Reno. So it's still a huge asset to our constituents and both motorized and non-motorized. So, and I'm very excited to hear the grant proposal for the Rock Creek. I was down on the east side a couple weeks ago and was seeing firsthand all the recreational boaters out in the Twin Lakes area as well as the Rock Creek area. Again, people are finding this still in the state of the pandemic, wildfire season, that you know, being outside and the connectivity to nature is as important as ever. So I just compliment the work of the staff and California Natural Resources for all their leadership right now in keeping these facilities open, because it is such an asset and a value to our constituents here in the state and visitors. So that is my report from the rural side of the state. And let me know if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hawkins. Commissioner Murillo?
I think I pressed the wrong button. Am I heard?
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. I noted with interest that there's an item on the agenda, something to the effect of commercial use of San Diego Bay, but I'm delighted to say that the industry has obviously and much appreciatively self-enforced or limited the percussive nature of the party boats off the Glorieta Bay and San Diego Bay. It was bothering the people who were using the golf course, the beach there, and also the residents. And of course, I've unlisted my number, but I haven't had a complaint in the last 3 weeks.
Thank you for that, Commissioner Murillo. So thank you all of you for your updates. We appreciate your time and commitment to the Boating and Waterways Commission. Next, we have announcement of public comment periods. Multiple public comment periods have been scheduled throughout the meeting. They will occur after the following reports. Acting Deputy Director update, San Diego Bay Commercial Vessels, For Hire Operators Vessel Licensing Programs, Licensing Requirements, Rock Creek Lake Boat Facility, our boat launch facility, Boating Infrastructure Grants, Aquatic Center Grants, Boating Safety Course, For Hire Programs, California Boating Card Program, Life Jacket Outreach and Loaner Program, Youth Boating Education Program, and California Boating Clean and Green Program. Also, agenda item 9 will be the public comment period on non-agenda items. The comment period will provide the opportunity for the public to make comments on items not on the agenda. Each speaker will have 3 minutes to present their comments. Members of the public are not required to provide their names. However, stating it would make it easier for staff to contact members of the public for any follow-up if necessary. Individual speakers may not pull their comments under one person to obtain a longer comment period. Next, Deputy Director's report. Acting Deputy Director Ramona Fernandez will present the division updates.
Good morning, everyone. Can I get the slide PowerPoint presentation up, please?
Sorry, just one moment. I thought we were doing public comment. You are muted.
Thank you. So good morning again, and thank you everyone. And we look forward to a productive meeting this morning. So can I have the next slide, please? But today I'm gonna update you on the items identified on your screen. The first item, we are happy to announce that we have 4 of our staff that were redirected to the contact tracing efforts. I would like to acknowledge and recognize those staff at this time, Jeff Cottle, Stephanie Pardell, Charlie Hesse, and Johanna Naughton, for their commitment to this important task for California. We do still have one staff member, Courtney Ferris, who's gracefully volunteered to continue on serving as a contact tracer until sometime this fall. We're also backfilling essential positions. Two of them are included in our grants unit. We had recent departures of analysts that managed our federal funded grant programs, which are CVA and BIG, Clean Vessel Act, and Boating Infrastructure Grants. We also are backfilling a key manager position, Staff Service Manager 2 in our Boating Safety Unit. One of the areas that we continue to have challenge with recruitment on is in our Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Treatment Field Operation. We will be advertising for 2 Aquatic Pest Control Program Managers to provide the leadership to our field crews. One of the challenges here is that we don't have a current certification list. So we'll be advertising these positions in what we call a TAU appointment. So it's a temporary 9-month appointment, which means that candidates do not need to be on a certification list, but they are required to take the exam when it becomes available and obviously be competitive to be picked up on a permanent basis. We're always looking for interested candidates in for these classifications in our field. So if you know of anyone interested and meets the qualifications, I'd encourage you to reach out to Eddie Hard from our Aquatic Invasive Program or Lane Massey from our admin chief to get more information. We also continue to have challenges in the rank and file classifications for our field operations, which is our aquatic plant control specialist, and technician series. These two classifications are on a continuous online testing basis. So those that have meet the qualifications of those can go online and take the exam on a continuous timeline. As a result of, COVID, we continue to adapt to the changes to prevent the spread of the latest Delta variant of the COVID virus. We're also continue to follow state and local county health recommendations relating to face covering. Vaccination attestation policy is now in effect for our department, or for the state, which requires our employees to provide verification of vaccination or be required to test weekly and wear a mask. And this process is currently being, is going on now at this time in our department. Our new building move. As a result of the state of the shift to from remote work during the pandemic, the California Natural Resources agencies have applied those challenges and lessons learned, and we have reimagined our workspace. We've created a more flexible and innovative workplace that will enable high productivity and strong job satisfaction. We will be transitioned to a more mobile work environment, allowing us to move about the building more readily and collaborate in a new casual gathering areas and meeting rooms. We have designated remote-centric staff who will spend most of their working days at the remote location rather than at their physical building location. These changes allow for an improved work-life balance and reduce our commuting impact. Workplace flexibilities and a hybrid work schedule will also be supported, as well as accommodations for employees traveling to Sacramento, providing modular privacy booths and enclosed collaborative pods to enhance their experience at this new building. We're excited to be part of this challenge, or this change, maybe some challenge, as some of our divisions within Parks will be moving into the new building in less than a week from now. DBW is scheduled to move in October, and we will be the residents on the 12th floor at 715 P Street. We look forward to working collaboratively with the rest of our department, as well as with other California Natural Resource agencies. Next slide, please. Well, this slide reflects our latest data from the DMV regarding vessel registrations. It's also broken down by county, and this is a report as of July 31st, 2021. Next slide. Regulation update. Since the Quagga Zebra Mussel Sticker Regulation went into effect through our regulatory change, the Division of Boating and Waterways has been working with the Department of Motor Vehicles to implement these changes. Some of the key updates are highlighted on the screen of where we are. And the DMV and Parks Work Group continues to meet monthly. Next slide, please. But this is a sample of the insert for the vessel renewal notices. As indicated on the screen, these are some of the outreach efforts that we will be moving forward with over the next several months. And also, I do want to recognize and thank our communications and marketing deputy director, Gloria Sandoval, and her staff, Shelley Kasecki, on assisting the division with this effort. and also our own staff, Kara Roderick, Joanna Andrade, and Karina Decker. And next slide, please. So other rulemaking packages, we are in the planning stage on two regulation packages. One is for our yacht and ship licensing program, and the other is for the for hire licensing program. AB 865 authorized DBW to establish a new fee schedule to bring both of these programs into a cost neutral status. This is a significant change to both of these programs and to the boating industry. And we do recognize the importance of engaging with these organizations before we actually move forward on the formal rulemaking packages. We also have several regulation packages that are planned over these next several years. So moving forward, I would like to recommend that we add a regulation update to the agenda. And the updates will be provided by our program analyst, Charlie Hesse. And next slide, please. So our budget for 21-22 on the screen identifies some of the highlights from the governor's enacted budget. The language included in the Budget Act relating to the fiscal stability of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. As indicated in the budget bill language on the screen, I just want to report that the division does look forward on collaborating with the boating stakeholders so that we can maintain the ongoing stability of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. Next slide, please. So, as reported on the previous slide, the Budget Act redirected $30 million general fund to the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund in the form of a transfer. This amount covers $10 million for the Davis-Dalwig revenue transfer from the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, $10.7 million to fund our aquatic invasive species operation. It also provides DBW with $9.3 million to cover revenues from the potential vessel registration fee increase that did not move forward at this time. The federal amount shown on the screen, which is the orange part, authorizes the division the ability to use federal trust funds that we receive from various federal grants, such as the Recreational Boating Safety Grant managed by the U.S. Coast Guard and the United States Fish and Wildlife Services. And that typically funds our big and CVA programs. The other acronyms on the screen is our Aquatic Abandoned Watercraft Abatement Fund. That's a transfer to that program, and the Vessel Operator Card account, which funds our California Boater Card program. Next slide, please. Our Harbors and Watercraft Appropriation, our Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund appropriation in 21-22 is, as you can see on the screen, is $19.9 million of support and $19.5 million that supports our local assistance programs, our grant programs. Next slide, please. So this drills down into our allocation to our programs. The main changes this year in compared to previous year is that the division had to come up with a $1.9 million budget change proposal reduction. And this funding reduction was applied to our aquatic invasive plant control program only. The amounts shown account for an additional 5% statewide special funding reduction to all operating expenses as directed by the Department of Finance. Next slide, please. So the main changes on our funding for our local assistance is it was reduced by approximately $12 million to match historical spending levels. This includes reductions to the boat launching facility grants and suspending our loan program. There's also a $750,000 reduction to our QZ grant program. Next slide, please. So this reflects the federal funding that we receive, and the division receives anywhere from $5 to $7 million through the Recreation Boating Safety Grant that's administered by the U.S. Coast Guard. And we also receive funding for the Clean Vessel Act through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And we also may receive funding for the Boating Infrastructure Grant Program. The federal authority roughly is about $19 million per year. The amount actually received in 21-22 is roughly $9 million. So, and this is due in part to the fluctuation amounts that we receive in federal grant funds. Next slide, please. So some of highlights for our grant programs. Right now in our grants unit, they are busy reviewing applications for the surrendered and abandoned vessel exchange grants and the boating safety and enforcement grant programs. We do anticipate award announcements for these two programs sometime next month. And a quick update in our aquatic invasive plant control treatment program. As with many divisions within our department and probably throughout the state right now, drought conditions and climate change continue to hamper our efforts and to effectively control the aquatic vegetation across our authority in the Delta. We do continue the staff working hard to prioritize and make positive progress as best we can. And next slide, please. So Mr. Chair, this does complete my report. And I would at this time like to read the legislative update from our legislative office. Legislative update, California legislation. This report provides summary excerpts and the status of legislation affecting the Division of Boating and Waterways. Information contained in this report is accurate as of July 29, 2021. Assembly Bill 591, Vessel Arrests. Summary, this bill would authorize peace officers to issue a fix-it ticket for the following vessel-related violations. 1, expired vessel registration. 2, failure to paint the vessel identification number on the forward half of the boat. 3, operating a vessel without possessing an operator's license. 4, failure to display registration stickers on a vessel. And 5, using a recreational boat without a proper flotation device. 6, operating a boat without a proper service fire extinguisher. And 7, having a fire extinguisher without a proper metallic nameplate. Status, it was signed in Chapter 57, Statutes of 2021. Assembly Bill 817 would sport fishing licenses 12 consecutive month licenses. Summary, this bill would authorize the Department of Fish and Wildlife to provide an electronic and mobile device option for fishing licenses on or before January 1, 2023, and issue 12 consecutive month sport fishing licenses until 2030, as specified. This bill would require DFW to submit a report to the legislature by January 1 of 2025 with recommendations on increasing fish license fees, as well as comprehensive evaluative legislative report evaluating program and participant impacts resulting from these authorized changes by January 1 of 2028, as specified. The status, it's referred to the Senate Appropriations Committee. And there is no action for this commission. This is only for information purposes. I would like to add, again, acknowledge the support and expertise of Deputy Director Mari Val Barajas and her team, that what they provide to the Division of Boating and Waterways. And that completes both my reports. Thank you.
Sorry, I can't believe I just forgot to take myself off. Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment on the Deputy Director's report?
I don't see any registered comments, but I do see some hands raised. And I just like to remind those listening in that if you're dialing by phone, it is *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute. I'm going to go ahead and call on our first participant. So Jerry Desmond. Let's see. Jerry, you should be unmuted.
Hello. Commissioners and department and director Jerry Desmond with Recreational Boaters of California, with just a few thoughts on the the excellent report by Acting Deputy Director Fernandez, and we appreciate her leadership on these issues. In regards to the HWRF deficiency, we had concerns with the registration fee increase, and are appreciative of the revisions in the May budget revise and the actions by the legislature. And a question that's out there in the boating community is, as we're hearing the report today, it sounds like, which would be news for our constituencies to know, that the registration fee increase has not occurred. And the reason in this budget proposal, and the reason we ask, is because we know the budget has been rolled out in different budget trader bills, you know, over a series of weeks. So if there's a final decision that we're able to report back, I know it would be of interest. And then also, as we have talked before, we look forward to the collaborative efforts and appreciate the director's outreach to the stakeholders and the commission as well, and really look forward to positive engagement. And in a couple of themes that have been mentioned today by Ramona and by Commissioners Peer and Hawkins, appear in a couple ways that we see as opportunities. As Ramona mentioned, in the climate change actions being taken by the state of California to address, you know, climate change and how we react. Secondly, in the Natural Resources Agency's 30 by 30 initiative for biodiversity. And as Commissioner Peer mentioned, you know, access and equity on the water, getting to the water, same with Commissioner Hawkins and Truckee and the different lakes and reservoirs. We see these opportunities for the future of on the water recreation for Californians in an equitable, inclusive manner with access for new opportunities on the water. And so really appreciate the leadership that's being taken, you know, by all of you on these, in these areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Chair Ehrman, I am not seeing any other public comments at this time. Yes. No public comments at this time.
So at this point, we'll move on. Any comments from the commissioners on the Deputy Director's report? Go ahead, Commissioner Murillo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of quick ones. I noticed in the budget something like $1.47 million for oceanography. I thought that was all but eliminated. Is that still in effect? Is there a breakdown on that 1.47 million?
So that program, it is still in effect. Yes, we do still fund the efforts, and those are through the transition of the reorganization of the department. Our Natural Resource Agency leads the efforts with oceanography and works with Scripps under the leadership of Jay Chamberlain. But yes, we the Harbors and Watercraft still do fund the efforts.
But that 1.47 million does reflect the elimination of the staff salary for the oceanographer.
No, that does not.
Does not.
No. Okay. So we still fund a position.
One other question. With respect to fluctuation amounts in the federal grant funds, fluctuation amounts. Okay, so we've got 9.7 million. Am I to infer that there's kind of a balance between other federal grants and the amounts reflected in this 9.7 million to reach a combined amount, a total sum?
So,
in other words, if federal grants, be it through infrastructure monies or anything else, if federal grant monies increase, do we suddenly see a diminishment of this 9.7 million?
We don't for these two particular programs that fund these programs. The recreational boating safety federal grant money is through the sport fish restoration fund through the I think it's through Homeland Security, and normally that stays kind of at the same. The CBA, it varies, but it does stay at, you know, at a certain level for states to provide that recreational boating safety funding. And then for the Clean Vessel Act and big program, and I believe Karen Dill is on the line as well, and that program, it could fluctuate. I don't know that we see... I'm not sure. Karen, can you kind of explain a little bit more on the big and CBA?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Murillo. We apply for federal grant funding each year. So it depends on whether we receive an award for the Clean Vessel Act grants. There are two under that program, the Inland CBA Grant Award and the Coastal. And so those are national applications and competitive grant processes, as well as the Boating Infrastructure Grant. Those are competitive nationally. And so we make our best effort and we apply for those federal grant funds every year, and they decide what they're going to give us. So there is fluctuation. The Clean Vessel Act grants are, we have been very successful, and I think we're the second or first in the amount of money we get nationwide in those programs. Boating infrastructure grants are dependent, you'll hear a little later in Debbie's presentation, those are dependent on actual projects that are submitted and compete, and those compete nationally. So that fluctuates quite a bit every year.
Very good. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Any other commissioners' comments on Deputy Director Ramona's report? So I just wanted to add, I wanted to echo your sentiments that I also extend a thank you to your staff that volunteered to be part of the contact tracing program. It's a valiant thing to leave your work environment to go do something else for the public safety. So I appreciate their efforts. And I'd also say that the transition to the new workspace is light years ahead of what any other state agencies are doing. I think you guys have made tremendous progress in accommodating the new work environment needs of your employees. And I think you should be commended for that as well.
Thank you.
So division staff presentations, as a follow-up to suggested agenda items from our commission meeting held on June 10th, 2021, we'll now hear from division staff Karina Dugar on San Diego Bay commercial vessels.
Good morning, my name is Karina Dugar and I'm the manager of our boating safety unit. I will be providing you information that was requested from our last commission meeting that was held on June 10th, 2021. Commissioner Murillo requested that division look into noise levels on a federal noise levels for commercial vessels, specifically in San Diego. Currently, there are no federal regulations regarding noise emissions for commercial vessels in San Diego. Next slide, please. However, there is a city ordinance 59.05.0403, as shown on the slide, that does reference watercraft noise criteria. If you could follow along, please. Violations for excessive noise of watercraft operating in waters under the jurisdiction of the City of San Diego shall be prosecuted under applicable provisions of the California Harbors and Navigation Code. Permits issued by the City of San Diego for the operation of watercraft not in compliance with noise criteria of the Harbors and Navigation Code shall be reviewed and approved by the administrator prior to the issuance. Next slide, please. Also, the division did want to provide information regarding noise emissions as related to the Harbors and Navigation Code 654.05. The owner of a motorized recreational vessel that is numbered pursuant to section 9850 of the vehicle code, or that is documented by an agency of the federal government, shall not operate or authorize the operation of the vessel in or upon the inland waters or in or upon ocean waters that are within 1 mile of the coastline of the state in a manner that exceeds the following noise levels. One, for engines manufactured before January 1st, 1993, a noise level of 90 dBA, which is decibels, and two, for engines manufactured on or after January 1993, a noise level of 88. Commissioner Murillo, I am happy to hear that you have no new complaints, and I hope that this has answered your questions, and that concludes my update. Do you have any further questions?
No, I think that will probably require some cooperation among the industry and the Port of San Diego and the five jurisdictions comprising the port. This reflects the engine noise level. The source of the complaints was not an engine. You couldn't hear the engine. It was just the bands and the percussion and the bands, the drums, the cymbals, and everything else, the amplified music that was coming from the party vessels. But again, a tip of the cap to Jerry and to several other members of the community for apparently self-policing it. The word seemed to get around, and I heard back from, oddly enough, people at the San Diego Yacht Club, not the Coronado Yacht Club, that there was some agreement to self-monitor this, that it really wasn't necessary to have this kind of volume so close to residential or recreational areas. So very grateful that this could be done so efficiently without mounds and mounds of paper and red tape.
Right. Okay, thank you.
And Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment on this presentation?
Chair Ehrman, I am not seeing anyone registered to comment at this time.
And do any of the commissioners have comment for this presentation? Go ahead, Tom.
Thank you for that, Karina. Sure. Something that's just perennially troubles me, and maybe you can answer this question, is part of the code says operating within the jurisdiction of the City of San Diego. And I guess, is that defined somewhere, exactly how it is that the City of San Diego has jurisdiction over a federal waterway?
So the city would have to develop their own county ordinances. So it really falls back on local jurisdiction to do that.
So they're meaning what? I mean, can you just give me some more on that? They're asserting their jurisdiction over what should be a federal jurisdiction?
No, I can actually, we could probably put you in touch or someone in touch with Coast Guard on a federal level of how their process works to develop federal regulations. We just don't do that. So on a county or city level, it would fall back on the city or the county to develop their own county ordinances that would regulate the noise level.
If you could give me, I'm really less concerned because sure. I don't live in San Diego and, but I do golf, so I'm concerned about this golfer efforts down there.
Sure. I will forward you some information on our contact with the U.S. Coast Guard.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Any other commissioners have comment? Okay, thank you, Karina Duggar, for your presentation.
You're welcome.
At this time, we'll hear from Division Staff Paris Shaw, for hire operators, vessel licensing program, licensing requirements.
Okay. Good morning. Good morning. My name is Paris Shaw. I'm the program administrator for the For Hire programs. At our last commission meeting held on June 10th, 2021, the commission requested the division report the differences between the For Hire vessel operator license requirements and the United States Coast Guard license requirements. Next slide, please. Here is a comparison list of the differences between the two licenses. The Coast Guard has different license requirements based on the tonnage of the vessel, as the For Hire license has no tonnage capacity. The Coast Guard captain's license is required of all For Hire vessel operators carrying one or more passengers, and the For Hire license is required for vessel operators carrying more than three passengers for hire. Next slide, please. In order to meet the experience requirement for a Coast Guard captain's license, the operator must have 360 days of experience operating a vessel. 90 of those days must be within the last 3 years on the ocean or near coastal waters, or the license will be limited to inland waterways. The For Hire vessel operator must have a year of experience on that type of vessel operating on that type of waterway for which the license is requested. The For Hire vessel operator licensee must perform an on-the-water practical exam, whereas an on-the-water exam is not required by the Coast Guard. Next slide, please. The Coast Guard requires applicants to take five examinations, one of which you must receive at least the 90%, and the other four you need to at least get 80%. The For Hire program applicants are required to take a 100-question multiple choice examination, which you must get a 70% or better. The TWIC card, or Transportation Worker Identification Credential, is required by the U.S. Coast Guard, not by the For Hire program, and cost $125.25. The application fee for a Coast Guard captain's license is $145 for a new application and $95 for a renewal application. The For Hire license and application are currently free. However, we are working on establishing a fee through AB 865. Next slide, please. Now I would like to introduce you to our For Hire licensing exam proctor, Douglas Powell. Doug holds a 100-ton captain license through the United States Coast Guard. He is a retired lieutenant from the Contra Costa Marine Patrol Unit. He currently serves as a boating accident consultant and has testified as an expert in federal and state courts. He also teaches two classes in the Law Enforcement Maritime Training Program. He trains law enforcement agents in the Inland Boater Operator course, as well as the Boating Accident Investigation course. He is a board member of the California Boating Safety Officers Association and a member of California State Sheriff's Association Boating Subcommittee. Doug, would you like to say a few words about the program?
Doug has to be promoted. Give me one moment.
No problem.
Good morning, chair members and Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this morning. Paris, that's a great overview of the program and some major differences between the U.S. Coast Guard's license and our license. I would have to say is the on-water check ride and the vessel inspection. Although the Coast Guard does inspect some passenger vessels or charter vessels, but not all of them. And under our program, each licensee has to have its vessel checked out. What we found in the probably the last few years is every vessel that we look at has probably had some sort of probably law violation and or safety violation. And I think that the program, us looking at those vessels, is extremely important, as well as the check ride. They actually go out and have to show that they are competent in handling the vessel. So you have a lot of new chartered boat captains. You have folks that are taking out fishing charters. And the one thing that we don't want to happen in our state is something that happened in Missouri with the duck boat accidents. And showing those where those safety items are, showing the life jackets and where they are and how to don and doff them is probably the most important part of the California's program. And I think it's well served and it's a great program. And like I said, we find deficiencies, but we work with these folks and to bring them up to speed and so that they're safe and that all their passengers are safe. As you know, if you're paying for a guide service or a chartered boat ride, whether it be up in Shasta or Big Bear, you expect that vessel captain to be proficient, and you expect that vessel to be proficient in its safety requirements. So I think that our program is one-ups the state or the federal program there, and I think we're providing a great service to our citizens and our boat captains.
Thank you, Doug. This concludes my presentation. If there are any questions regarding the information that was presented today, myself and Doug will be happy to answer.
Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment or question?
I am not seeing any public comments at the moment, no.
And do we have any comments or questions from the commissioners? Commissioner Pierre, go ahead.
Well, first off, Paris, thank you very much for that presentation, because as you're likely aware, I had some real concerns after the presentations at our last commission meeting. First off, when you have a moment, can you put your number back on the screen? Because I would like to contact you just to get your decks so I can kind of review them, because it went by rather quickly. But secondly, I think one of my primary concerns related, and we can, I think it's Doug, the expert might be able to address this, but my understanding is with the Coast Guard, you have to have a certain number of hours on a certain boat that has a certain amount of tonnage in order to qualify to license that same size vessel for hire. And it went by quickly. Maybe you can just answer the question, is my understanding from the presentation of the last commission meeting was that those tonnage limits do not necessarily apply. In other words, I could have my experience on, say, a 5-ton vessel and then go ahead and get licensed for a 100-ton vessel. Is that, am I stating that correctly, the existing state of regulations?
Paris, you want me to answer that?
Sure.
Okay, so no, that is not correct. They must apply for not only the waterway or the type of waterway, but also the vessel size. So they must have some type of experience on that same size vessel for which they're testing for. So, nobody checks with the U.S. Coast Guard. You can get, when I received my 100-ton license, nobody checked me out to see if I knew what I was doing. Unlike the state, we actually check them out on the size vessel that they're going to obtain their license for. So we kind of have a little bit more safety minded in our regulations, and it's for good reason.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Okay. Well, I'm hearing you use a key phrase there, which is a certain number of hours on the same size vessel. What does that mean?
Well, there is, it's not defined by law as in the state program. In the federal program, every 4 hours on the water equals 1 day of service. Under the state program, and this is in statute, you must show 1 year experience. Now, there is a small issue there because it doesn't define what 1 year experience is. It doesn't say it's 365 days of service, that being a 4 hours equals a day. It says that you have to have 1 year experience. And so that leaves some room for interpretation. The thing I will tell you though is that we, again, take those folks out, those captains or potential captains out on a check ride. So they have to actually show their proficiency on not only their safety briefing, their vessel safety requirements, but they actually have to be able to drive the boat. And so we do check for that, and we do ensure that these folks can pull away from the dock. They know the rules of the road, and that they know the correct safety briefings. They know to show potential passengers how to don and doff a life jacket, where that safety equipment is on that boat. And again, that's something that the Coast Guard just doesn't do. So I yes, we have a problem when it comes to defining what 1 year is. However, we have an added layer of security or safety when it comes to a check ride.
Understood. Okay. Well, again, I appreciate that. And I'll just, I guess just in closing, you know, I was very disturbed by the event that took place in Missouri, because it seemed really, really a tragedy that was completely avoidable. And that's what sort of brought this issue to the forefront of my mind, is to avoiding that situation. And if you recall, I'm sure you do, that was a situation in which winds, you know, developed very rapidly, creating unsafe operating conditions. So while I'm mindful of the state's ride-along program, presumably that's taking place, you know, probably on a nice calm day, and may not really speak to the operator's proficiency in operating in more exigent or dangerous conditions. But we're not here to legislate. I'm just, you know, kind of voicing my concerns. And on with that, I don't want to take any more of the commission's time. But I thank both of you very much for that very thorough report. And Paris, I'll get in touch with you just so you can send me that deck so I can have a little more time to go over it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Do any other commissioners have comments or questions? I'll just add, I just want to thank Lieutenant Powell and Paris Saw for these kind of programs don't work without subject matter experts and the time that you guys have dedicated to this. I really appreciate it. That's really gone a long way. Kind of like what Commissioner Pierce said when we talked about the duck boat accidents and whether those could occur here in California as well. But it's really nice to know we appear to be really ahead of the curve of what the feds or the other states are doing. And we appreciate that. And we appreciate your report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So at this time, commission advice and comment. We have Rock Creek Lake, Boat Lake. My thing cut out. At this time, Joe Dux will present on the Rock Creek Boat Launch Facility.
Good morning, Chairman Ehrman, commissioners, Acting Deputy Director Fernandez, and Legal Counsel Tobias, and everyone in attendance. I am Joe Dux, Project Manager with the Grants and Loans Unit. I am presenting the United States Forest Service's request for a $1.5 million construction grant for improvements to the Rock Creek Lake Boat Launching Facility. Representing the Forest Service is District Ranger Philip Descents and Civil Engineer Aaron Amari. We are seeking the Commission's advice and comment on this proposed project. Next slide. While the Commission is not required to hold a tour of the project site, the Commission is required to hold a meeting in close proximity, but because of concerns with COVID-19 pandemic, a Boating Waterways Commission tour is not possible.
So the Forest Service will provide a presentation of the site for you to learn about Rock Creek Lake and the proposed boat launching facility project. And Travis, can we start the video?
Hi there, welcome to the Rock Creek Boat Launching Facility on the Indian National Forest. My name is Aaron, and I'll be giving you a brief overview of this facility. The Rock Creek Boat Launching Facility is located on the eastern side of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, and it's located approximately 20 miles northwest of the city of Bishop. Rock Creek Lake is one of the few alpine lakes on the Indian National Forest that is accessible by paved road, which allows boaters to enjoy the lake all the way through the fall, and also allows them to enjoy the wonderful fall colors that the area has to offer. The facility is open, free and open to the public, and it typically opens starting in mid-April all the way till the end of fall when Rock Creek Lake Road closes due to snow. The facility typically receives about 1,000 boaters, and this number is estimated to increase to about 1,800 boaters.
The Rock Creek Boat Launching Facility is in need of a full makeover. There's a lot of problems here that include erosion on the boat ramp, parking issues, and sediment control. There's also a bathroom facility that is located quite a distance away from the parking, making it hard to access by people with mobility issues. What we'd like to do here is address all those issues.
Currently, the Division of Boating and Waterways has funded a planning grant for the design of the Rock Creek Lake Boat Launching Facility. That design is nearly complete. Permits are in the process of being obtained. Right now, we are seeking funding to reconstruct the facility.
It's a great opportunity to be able to partner with the state to provide these kind of amenities to the public and for public benefit.
The existing ramp is made out of a geotextile fabric, which has failed and is no longer safe for people to use. And so what happens is instead of people using this, they end up using the gravel and the beach on the other side because they don't want to use this. And as you can see, this fabric is no longer stable enough for people to use and launch their boats. The other issue that we have that is wrong with this boat ramp is it has no boarding float and it's no longer accessible. In other words, it's not accessible to people who have disabilities. And what we're hoping for with this construction grant is to address the accessible issues with this boat, by installing a boarding float and also constructing a single lane boat launching ramp that is accessible to everybody. Yeah, the issue that we're trying to address is the erosion problem. Since this ramp has failed, it has created a lot of lake erosion into the lake. And so with a new boat launch ramp, we'll be addressing that issue as well.
The structure has deteriorated to the point that it's not safe, and it's a tripping hazard as well.
The water level at Rock Creek Lake is relatively consistent. It isn't actively managed, and there are two outflows on the north end of the lake. Most of the erosion happens due to wave action. The lake is extremely popular for recreational boating and fishing, and it's a popular destination for visitors to the Inyo National Forest from Southern California.
One of the other barriers to use here is that it's all mostly car top boating. So your little kayaks or your float tubes for the fishermen. It's near impossible to launch a boat from a trailer here. While there's a permittee that has a dock. Right now, you can't access the site with a trailer easily. There's no place to turn around and there's no parking. We'd like to change that through a Division of Boating and Waterways grant to improve the facility.
So we're in the overflow parking area of a boat launching facility. And one of the things that we want to do with this construction grant is to expand the parking areas over here to create trailer parking. We also want to address the sedimentation flows and erosion issues in this parking area. And we also would like to increase to make it a little bit bigger because it's a little bit narrow.
The boat launch is one component of the whole holistic approach to the Rock Creek Canyon. Other projects that we have in the works include campground improvements and trailhead improvements. We're looking at bringing in Great American Outdoors Act funding to help pay for some of these other improvements at some of our other recreation sites and to supplement certain components of this project. And that funding from Great American Outdoors Act has tentatively been received, and so it will pair really nicely if we were to be given this construction grant. And one of the things we're doing is we're replacing a flush toilet with a vault toilet. And so not only are we getting rid of wastewater infrastructure, we're going to start saving water. You know, every flush counts, and so we're going to save water on converting to a vault toilet. But then that also provides accessibility year-round.
The Inyo National Forest would like to provide a boating experience for recreational users of all abilities and mobility types. We'd like this facility to be free to use by anyone. To do that, we need to make some improvements at the site. Our goal is to provide quality visitor experience for a diversity of user groups that is free and functional.
Recreation in the Eastern Sierra is an economic driver. And that's something that the Inyo National Forest brings to the community, is those recreation opportunities. The better visitor experiences we can have at our facilities, and the more likely they are to come back. Considering that that is a driver for our local communities, it's something we value in the Forest Service, and it's something we strive to improve given the opportunity.
Thank you so much, and bye from the Inyo.
All right, thank you to the Forest Service for that informative presentation. I will now continue with my staff presentation. As you saw on the Forest Service presentation, Rock Creek Lake is located approximately 33 miles from northwest of Bishop and 34 miles south of Mammoth Lakes. It is in the southern Sierra Nevada mountain range of the Inyo National Forest in Inyo County. Next slide. Rock Creek Lake is approximately 9,600 feet above sea level and one of the highest drive-to lakes in the area. The Forest Service allows free day use parking and free public access to the lake. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife stocks the lake with brown and rainbow trout. The lake can accommodate small fishing boats and it's popular for fishing, swimming, rowing, kayaking, canoeing, float tubes, and paddle boarding. The launch ramp is inaccessible for to vehicles during the snowy winter months. Snow plows typically clears the road from April to open the fishing season. Next slide. Rock Creek Lake Boat Launching Facility features a single lane asphalt boat launch ramp, parking at the main parking area, and there is an overflow parking area one block away and a two-unit unisex flush restroom. Next slide. It is unknown when the existing asphalt boat launch ramp was constructed. The ramp's angle of entry into the water does not meet DPW's design guidelines. The shallow slope is not steep enough to keep launching vehicles' tailpipes from being submerged during launch and retrieval. The asphalt has deteriorated and contains many cracks. Next slide. The fabric gravel area shown signs of extensive use. The gravel within the fabric is loose and that repair has since failed. Next slide. The shoreline surrounding the boat launching facility is gently sloped, allowing launches for kayaks, canoes, and other non-motorized vessels to be made directly from shore. Next slide. The existing restroom has two unisex flush toilets that require continuous maintenance and must be shut down in the winter to avoid freezing conditions and bursting pipes. Next slide. The boat launching facility's main parking area includes 16 single vehicle parking spaces, but is not ADA compliant and does not provide vehicle trailer parking. The asphalt surface of the main parking area is worn and the striping is faded. Next slide. The overflow parking area is approximately one block away and it contains 20 single vehicle spaces. Next slide. This is the proposed improvement design at the 90% level. We are demolishing the existing boat launch ramp, regrade and construct a single lane concrete V groove ramp, install slope protection to both the sides and the toe of the ramp for erosion protection, install an 8-foot wide by 60-foot cable guided boarding float, demolish the existing flush restroom, and install an ADA compliant double unisex vault restroom near the parking area. The Forest Service will fund half the cost of the restroom. We will reconfigure the main parking area and provide surface treatments to prolong its life. Construct an accessible path of travel from the main parking area to the restroom to the top of the boat ramp. Construct a retaining wall near the vault restroom, and install a project credit sign giving credit to the Harbors and Watercraft Involvement Fund and the Forest Service for operation and maintenance of the facility. Next slide. This is the proposed improvements for the overflow parking area. The main parking area and the overflow parking area will be reconfigured to provide a minimum of a total of 40 vehicle trailer, single vehicle, and ADA accessible parking. Next slide. The table identifies the estimated costs for the proposed improvements. This estimate includes a construction contingency fund reserved for any unforeseen overages that may occur during the construction phase, and a $100,000 in mitigation expense for weed removal. Next slide. We estimate that over 2,300 motorized and non-motorized boaters would benefit from these improvements annually, and over 46,000 boaters would benefit from the improvements over the 20-year life of this grant. DBW analysis establishes that a benefit-cost ratio exceeding one is worthy of consideration from a financial perspective. For this project, the ratio is at 1.11. Next slide, please. DPW recommends the condition that the Forest Service shall complete NEPA requirements by December 30th of 2021. Next slide. The Forest Service will be responsible for operating and maintaining the boat launching improvements for 20 years after construction completion. At this time, DPW seeks the Commission's advice and comment on this proposed $1.5 million Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund construction grant to the United States Forest Service for the Rock Creek Lake boat launching facility improvements as described in the August 12, 2021 feasibility report. Next slide. And this concludes my presentation. My contact information is on the screen, and Philip Desens and Aaron Amaride with the Forest Service is also available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Okay, Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment or questions?
Yes, so far I see one hand raised, Jim King. I'm going to ahead and unmute your device and you should be unmuted.
Hello, I'm not sure if you can hear me. I'm new to this Zoom stuff, but my name is Jim King, and my family and I have run the Rock Creek Lakes Resort for over 40 years. So we're very familiar with the boat ramp issues there. We do have the little rental boat dock nearby, and there's no room for any public boats on our dock. So I think the proposal also allows for a public courtesy dock next to the new ramp. And this has been needed for many, many, many years. I think the Rock Creek Lake may be the only Eastern Sierra lake that allows, that allows motorized vessels that does not have a usable launch ramp on it. Most all the other lakes in our side of the Sierra have decent launch ramps for the public. So I just want to put in my two bits worth to say this is a badly needed project to have happen, and we really appreciate the commission's taking a hard look at it. I watched the earlier part of the meeting, and it looks like Commissioner Hawkins possibly paid a visit to Rock Creek Lake here recently, and I thank her for that. And if she did, she could see firsthand what's needed there. And if she showed up on a weekend, probably saw how heavily used the lake is right there. So thank you for the opportunity to make a comment on it.
Thank you, Mr. King.
Chair Ehrman, I am not seeing any other comments at this time. I just want to remind the public, if they're dialing in by phone, star 9 to raise your hand and star 6 to unmute. But at this time, I do not believe there are any more comments from the public.
Do we have any comments or questions from the commissioners?
Chair Ehrman.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't see. Go ahead, Commissioner Hawkins.
I will, again, just strongly encourage my other commissioners to approve this proposal from the rural standpoint of the economic driver that it does have within the community. It's overwhelming. Again, this is these high alpine lakes in the Inyo National Forest is where we see a lot of local community members, but also visitors and a lot of folks coming from the urban areas, especially in Southern California. And it is kind of their one-stop access right up to a really an amazing high alpine outdoor recreation experience. And again, Mr. King said, if I was there on a weekend, which I was, I saw firsthand the people enjoying the area. As well as I just applaud the Inyo district rangers and of the area with their leadership in putting this proposal together and the cross-jurisdiction collaboration that's happening with parks and the Forest Service on this, and as well as utilizing resources from the Great American Outdoors Act, which was passed last year, that will address this. So I feel like this is a win-win for the community and California boating waterways to enhance outdoor recreation experience for the community and visitors. So that's my thoughts on this. And I'm so sorry that we're not there to go see this amazing high alpine lake right now, because it's pretty incredible.
Would you accept that as a motion, Mr. Chairman?
No, I will call for a motion for consent.
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, Megan, I'll call the roll.
All right. Okay, Commissioner Murillo of Coronado, California, I'm gonna start with you.
Aye. A-Y-E.
Commissioner Hawkins of Truckee, California.
Aye.
Commissioner Peer of San Francisco, California.
Aye.
And Chairman Ehrman of Oxnard, California.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Ehrman.
So with that, our next agenda item is our break. It's now 10:30. We will resume at 10:45. So please be back promptly so we can continue with our commission meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your support.
Thank you so much.
Chair Ehrman, it is 10:45 and we are broadcasting and recording. Chair Ehrman, you are muted.
You think I would get over that at some point. At this time, we'll move to hear from department staff. We have Debbie Holmes, Boating Infrastructure Grant Program, please.
Hi, good morning. My name is Deborah Holmes, and I am a manager one in the Grants and Loans Unit at DBW. Today, I'll be presenting a program update on the Federal Boating Infrastructure Grant Program, which is also known as BIG. Next slide, please. The purpose of the BIG is to construct, renovate, or maintain visitor tie-up facilities for recreational transient vessels that are 26 feet or more in length and that will stay 15 days or less. BIG is a federally funded program and it is managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, funded from the Sport Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund. DBW is the designated state entity responsible for administering this program. Next slide, please. The BIG program offers two different grant awards. Tier one grants can provide up to $200,000 for projects in California. Tier two applications are ranked nationally and up to $1.5 million may be awarded per project. Each grantee must meet all eligibility requirements and provide a minimum of a 25% match. This year's application guidance was released on June 29th, and we had a submission deadline of August 2nd. We received one application, which is currently being reviewed here at DBW. If eligible, the application will be submitted to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service by September 20th, and awards are typically announced in the spring of each year. Next slide, please. BIG eligible activities include tie-up facilities, which are slips, piers, mooring buoys, docks, and gangways. Amenities may include fuel stations, restrooms, utilities, and laundry. Security is lighting, communications, and beacons. Safe harbor can be breakwaters, wave attenuators, and seawalls. Soft cost would include engineering and permitting, and these funds can also pay for dredging, one time up to $200,000. Next slide, please. Since the program's inception in the year 2000, California has been awarded over $18 million for a total of 37 infrastructure projects. These are at 27 different public and private entities. 18 of them were Tier 1 grants and 19 of them were Tier 2 grants. Next slide, please. Currently, we have six active BIG projects, and those are listed here on the slide. Next slide, please. Two BIG projects were completed this year, one of which, pictured here, is the Raley's Landing at Tinesh Zalecki Dock, located in West Sacramento. Next slide. The second completed project shown here is the San Pedro Public Market Courtesy Dock, which is located in Southern California. Next slide. So that concludes my presentation, and I would encourage you to visit the DBW Grants and Loans website for additional information on the BIG program. Now I could answer any questions you have regarding BIG the program or projects. Thank you.
Hey, Megan, do we have anybody registered for questions or comments regarding Boating Infrastructure Grant Programs?
I do not see anyone raising their hands at this time. No.
Okay, thank you.
Do any commissioners have any comments or questions? Okay, thank you, Debbie Holmes, for your presentation. Next, we have Amy Rigby, Aquatic Center Grants.
Good morning. My name is Amy Rigby, and I will be presenting a program update on DBW's Aquatic Center program. Next slide, please. So DBW receives funding for this program from the Federal Sport Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund that's administered by the Coast Guard. We are required to follow federal and U.S. Coast Guard guidelines when granting funds to these aquatic centers. Successful applicants must provide on-the-water education. They need to be learning boating skills, and participants must be wearing life jackets at all times. And our application scoring is designed to give points for identifying and addressing area-specific issues. For example, one of our grantees is in an area with a high number of powerboating accidents. And to address this, they make sure that they offer powerboating safety courses. So that's what we're looking for. Next slide, please. The program's purpose is to provide funding to existing and successful on-the-water boating safety programs. Through the grant application and the scoring process, DBW identifies programs that are already doing a good job teaching people boating safety and grants some funding to augment their existing safety programs so that they can educate additional people. The types of agencies that can apply are colleges and universities, cities and counties, and other types of public agencies, and also nonprofit organizations. And the activities that are available to, for them to ask for funding are all types of paddle activities, rafting, canoeing, kayaking, stand-up paddle boarding, that sort of thing, and all sorts of power. Open motorboat, water skiing, personal watercraft instruction, and then also sailing and windsurfing and those types of things. Next slide, please. So the funding categories that are allowable are we grant equipment, various types of equipment. We grant scholarship funds to help offset the cost of programming. Also instructor training. And events related to boating safety, such as National Safe Boating Week events, or they might be an event that is at a certain lake that they do every year, and we capitalize on that and grant funding to expand that event to talk about boating safety education. Next slide, please. Some restrictions on the funding. We do not grant money for permanent structures. Competition activities have a limit. This is a Coast Guard requirement. It is limited. Use of the equipment for competition is limited to 10% of overall activities. And rentals as well has a limitation of about 40% of the activities for a given vessel can be for rental activities. And that's because we want, the goal of the program is to focus on boating safety education. And certainly that can happen sometimes during competition or like people honing skills by renting a vessel after they've taken a course. So we do, those things are allowed, but they have a cap. Next slide, please. So for the 2021 budget and impact, for the last season, we granted just over $1.5 million to 46 aquatic centers. And the average award you see is $34,000. There's a cap of $40,000 for any one agency, plus an additional $2,000 for boating events. And then the annual students trained annually were 32,000 students. That's about cut in half due to COVID. You know, people had a lot of social distancing that they had to put into place and other safety measures. So a lot of them could only serve about half of the population, even though some of them were closed and some of them were busier than ever, but again, couldn't serve a complete number of people that they normally would because they have to keep people spread out or in cohorts. Some of them had to offer programming for the same kids for like a 3-week period in some of the Bay Area counties. So maybe they normally would have in a normal year offer maybe a 1-week program or a 2-week program. They were required to offer a 3-week program for some of the local restrictions to, and so it affected how the numbers were in some of those. But one last thing I'll just say about that. About 40% of the students served are from underserved areas. There's a variety of ways that we look at that. There's a website that State Parks uses that people can check out their area and see if it's an underserved community, or so also if they're about 80%, the median salary is 80% of the median for the state. You might be considered underserved if you have a disability. Some of those things like that. That's how the underserved numbers are calculated. Next slide. Some recent program improvements. Back in 2019-20, we revised the grant application pretty substantially, and each year we try to revise it just a little more to dial it in. You know, make sure the questions are correct and that the applicants they're understandable to the applicants. And so we continue to fine tune the application. Overall, it's working very well. We also have continued our independent grant reviews. So we have a team of people reviewing the grants that other than the program people to make sure that decisions are fair. Again, we continue to adapt to COVID-19 restrictions, and we have our 2021-22 application coming up in September, and that'll be open for 6 weeks. We're hoping it's around mid-September to the end of October should be the window that might get adjusted slightly. Next slide, please. And that concludes my presentation. There's my contact information there. And if there are any questions from the public or commissioners, I'd be happy to answer them.
Great. We'll hear from public comment now.
At this time, I do not see any public comments.
Do we have any comments or questions from any of the commissioners?
Well, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Debbie Holmes, for your presentation. Excuse me.
That's okay. That's all right.
Amy Rigby. Next, we have Melissa Miranda for Boating Safety Course, California Boating Card Program, Life Jacket Outreach and Loaner Program, and Youth Boating Education Program.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Melissa Miranda, and I'm the Boating Education Outreach Manager over our small but very efficient and highly qualified unit. And back in 2018, the California State Parks went through a transformation, and our unit was moved out of the Division of Boating and Waterways, and we were put into the Interpretation and Education Division. And this has been mutually beneficial for all of our programs. And we continue to support all of the functions and the mission of DBW, and we work in coordination with all the other DBW programs. Funding for these programs comes from the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, and then also the Vessel Operator Card Account, which covers the California Boater Card Program. And that is a loan from the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund that will be paid back. Today, I'll be presenting to you on these following programs. This is our update from the last year. And so I'll be presenting on the California Voter Card Program, voting safety courses, safe voting outreach, life jacket outreach and loaner programs, and youth voting safety education. And since I'm covering so many different topics and we have some new commissioners and welcoming back some others, I'd like to stop at the end of each of these sections to allow you guys some time to ask some questions. So I'll be allowing that after each section. So starting with the California Voter Card Program, this is a program that was signed into law in 2014 under SB 941. And this prohibits the operation of motorized vessels without a California voter card. This program is being phased in by age. And this year, as of January 1st, it's 40 and younger that are required to carry the card. And by 2025, all operators of motorized vessels will be required to carry the California voter card. So the card is an education card. It proves that you have successfully passed a safe voting course and applied and paid your $10 for the lifetime California voter card. And this graph shows voter card activity for the past fiscal year. The green bar represents applications submitted, and the blue bar represents the cards issued. So over this past reporting period, we received 57,489 applications, and we issued 45,380 California voter cards. Now, a reason for the lower amount of cards issued is voters can apply when they still need to complete their education. So they won't be issued their card until they show us proof of completing that education requirement. To date, overall for the program, we've received 140,000 applications and issued over 111,000 cards. As you can see, we're seeing an increase during voting season, both last year and this year. And part of the reason for that too is a major ramp up of marketing efforts. We were able to start marketing this past year, and you'll see that big increase last year during June 2020. A lot of people were home and able to take that safe voting course. We're also seeing, you know, getting new voters phased in. This over the last couple of years, we've had a big chunk of voters that are required to have that voter card. And we expect to see these applications and cards issues increasing as our marketing efforts also increase. So this is in comparison to the previous reporting period. And as you can see, most of it is increased applications and voter cards issued. And again, a lot of that can be contributed to the age requirement and then also our marketing efforts. So covering our marketing efforts, of course, due to COVID-19, like a lot of other programming, our in-person events ceased. So back in March 2020, that was when we had our last event, and so far they haven't come back for in-person events. They're all put on hold until further notice. So with the help of our advertising agency, Uncommon, we work through our social media accounts to provide social media messaging. And we geo-target that to our audience to optimize our reach. We also do digital advertising. So if you're on a website and you meet our analytics, so we'll follow you around, send you a, you'll get served an ad similar to the one you see on the screen. And then we have printed advertisements as well. These are rack cards. And we provide these to law enforcement and other agencies. And we had something similar that was provided in the last vessel registration that went out through the DMV that was last year though. And we also have marina posters throughout the state. And these posters obviously are advertising the card and direct people to our website to get a little more information about how they can apply for the card. So that concludes my update on the California Voter Card, but I want to give an opportunity if anybody has any questions regarding our California Voter Card program.
I think we'll hold public comment to the end of the reports. Do any commissioners have any questions at this point?
Quick one, please.
Go ahead, Commissioner Murillo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Melissa. Forgive the manifest ignorance here. No. But what about frequent or infrequent visitors from up the coast, Oregon or Washington? Or is there any card requirement?
Yeah, so we have some exemptions for those that do not need the California Voter Card. So if you're visiting from out of state, they have up to 60 consecutive voting days before they would need to get the California Voter Card. So the card is, so it's not tied to vessel registration, it's tied to your primary residency. So if you're visiting from out of state, you'll need to meet the requirements from your state that you're visiting from, but they would not need the California Voter Card just to visit and vote.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Any other questions?
Other questions?
I had a question.
Yes.
Tom Pierre here. Can you just describe for us what the educational component is? Is that something, that a course that the state provides? Is that independent contra? Is there a cost associated with it? How long does it take? That kind of stuff.
Okay, thank you for that. I'm actually going to get into California Voter Card. I made a note so I'd remember to say that to you guys. I'm going to talk about our education, how we approve boating safety courses next, but I can give you just a little bit of background. So part of the requirement is that there is a NASLA approval for the safe boating course, and then we approve courses within the state. So I'll get into a little more nitty gritty on that in just a minute. But we do currently have a good amount of courses that are approved for the California Voter Card program, but it does have to be an approved course that somebody takes in order to get the voter card. And additionally, so yes, it's a $10 lifetime fee for the card, but there are, so some course providers charge. So DBW offers a free home study course. I don't wanna give away all my exciting news that I'm gonna share in a minute, but we offer a free home study course. Yeah, and then there's another free online course. So you'll see in our statistics kind of where those fall and how many people enjoy those free courses. But there's kind of something for everyone for the courses. It's a basic boating safety course. So there's no practical, you know, on the water requirement for that. And so the idea is that boaters are kind of learning the basic rules of the road per se, rules of the water. And so they're getting just that general knowledge. And then they apply for the California Voter Card. So that's a $10 lifetime fee. So overall, a boater can get their voter card for $10, but some boaters choose to take a course that costs money, anywhere from like $29.99 or something like that, up to, I believe there's a course that's almost $60. So.
Okay, good.
Yeah, does that answer all your questions?
Yeah, you know, I had just one, just out of pure curiosity.
Of course.
You said you're gonna get into demographics, but what's the ratio men to women who have applied for the card? Because the commission, we had talked about this previously, just, you know, if it's not at your fingertips or if you're going to cover it later, I'm really, again, more just curiosity.
It is not at my fingertips. I do have our California Voter Card specialists on tap. I'm not sure if that's on something. If they want to raise their hand, I think that's how they have to answer.
Pure curiosity,
if they
have that. So not an important.
Okay. No, that's a good question. I know that we primarily, well, not primarily, I do believe it's more men than women, but that's traditional for boating analytics anyway. So if you'd like that statistic, I'd be happy to get it to you, unless, are you seeing Megan?
Yeah, Evan, you're unmuted if, okay, yeah, I saw your hand raised if you have something to say.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm Evan Becker. I work under Melissa in the California Voter Card Program. I don't have them at my fingertips, but the last time I checked, you're probably looking in the high 70s, probably to the low 20s, male versus female.
Great. Thank you.
Yep.
Awesome. Thank you, Evan. Any other questions? Okay, not, I'll move forward. And then of course there'll be time at the end if somebody has any follow-up questions as well. So next I'm gonna talk to you about the California our boating safety courses. So like I was mentioning, DBW does provide a home study course, and this is approved through NASBLA, the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators. And then we have our California specific course requirements as well. So this past year we gave out 80,000 would be awesome. We distributed 8,000 courses, and these are hardcover books. So like the book that you're seeing on the screen there. And then we distributed 4,000 exam packets, and the exam packets are something that's relatively new. It's a lot less expensive for us to distribute the exam packet, and then they can view the course on our website. So we have an ebook option. So that's obviously a step in the right direction to the digital world. And what we did, we scored almost 3,500 exams. And most of these exams are correlated with the California Boater Card Program. Sometimes they're court ordered and not associated with the California Boater Card Program. But and then, like I said, we have the ebook option available. And we are currently up for our NASBLA reapproval. They provided approval every 3 years. And so at the end of this year, we're working right now to seek approval for a revised edition that includes updates and just general updates, the things that pictures and things like that. So we are working very hard on that. Let's see. Oh, and this past year, something super exciting. We approved our first Spanish course. And so that's really awesome to be able to expand our access to California boaters. And I should mention before approving that, part of what we do is, or what our team does, is approve other boating safety courses. So like I said, we have quite a few different courses that are approved for the California Boater Card Program. So we have to go through, once NASBLA provides an approval, we go through the state specific portion and make sure that they're meeting the California requirements for our course book. And so hopefully that helps explain kind of the differences of our own course versus we have other course providers. And the full list of approved courses for the California Boater Card Program is available on our website. But we do have, there's some in-person courses. So like the Coast Guard Auxiliary and the United States Power Squadron, now known as the America's Boating Club. And then there's quite a few online options as well. And then once we get our NASBLA recertification, or while we're working on that concurrently, we are also planning to translate our course into Spanish as well. So we're super excited to continue increasing access. This is just a picture of people taking it online, that ebook option that I was telling you about. So here's a breakdown of the most popular courses that are taken, specifically for the California Boater Card compliance within the last reporting period. As you can see, the DBW courses account for about 9% of the total courses taken. And then the large yellow chunk for Boat US, that's the free online course. And so that's really great that, people have different options and learn different ways. So these are some great different options for people to get educated and get their California Boater Card. Okay, so I am finished covering our boating safety courses. Are there any questions? Okay, seeing none, I'll move on to our safe boating outreach. So this is our opportunity to engage with boaters. And again, like I mentioned before, those in-person events, which is, the one-on-one engagement with boaters that unfortunately wasn't able to happen this past year, but we were able to switch to, really rely on our digital platform. And we were able to, shift our goals and then be able to create some original content. So some of these pictures you're seeing on the left side of the screen created some just very simple homemade videos. And we found that these organic videos are a little bit more relatable to voters rather than something that's like overly professionally produced. So that was something we worked really hard on this past year. In addition to, we also worked with our lifeguards throughout state parks, which was really awesome to be able to provide some different perspectives of different waterways and different things people experience, you know, in the varied waterways of California. And so we actually provided, there were three different series or three different videos in this series. And those ones were a little bit longer. They were kind of a deeper dive. So they were about 45 minutes each. And those garnered a total of 23,000 views. And then I meant to let you know, those organic videos that we did, like those ones on the left side that you see it just an image of, we were able to generate 300,000 impressions, which is awesome. You know, just reaching our voters throughout the state and giving them that message in that organic way. So some of the benefits of utilizing a digital strategy, we're able to reach a larger number of voters than just a simply doing in-person events. So, you know, we'll take a multi-pronged approach when we're able to, but at this point, you know, we're really able to geo-target our audience and optimize our spend with our multimedia campaign to be able to reach those voters. Another benefit is being able to reach an audience in a more rural and underserved communities. Do we have any questions regarding outreach for the last reporting period? And again, there'll be an opportunity at the end of the presentation too, if you need. So seeing none, we'll move on to Life Jacket outreach and loaner programs. Over the past year, we were, even though, you know, we weren't doing in-person events, we were still able to give out over 6,000 life jackets throughout the state, which I think is really incredible. A lot of the loaner programs really ramped up their volume of loaner jackets that they had available. And then they also, we were able to increase the number of life jacket loaner stations throughout the state. So we have over 100 life jacket loaner stations throughout the state. They all run a bit different. Some are standalone loaner boards, like the ones you're seeing here on the screen. Others operate within like a marina or inside some kind of storefront or visitor center. And each waterway manager or whoever requests the program, they're able to kind of run the program however they see fit. They monitor the life jackets and reach out to us whenever they're in need of additional resources. So something new this year, which I'm super proud of and really excited to share with you guys, we were able to finally produce a life jacket loaner board kit. So what you're seeing here is obviously the instructions. It's like a little IKEA instruction. This is kind of what the kit looks like. So we're able to provide everything that's needed for a standalone loaner board for somebody to start up a new life jacket loan station. So I know a lot of waterway managers or organizations are interested in starting a life jacket loaner board or loaner program, but don't have the resources necessarily to do that. And so this is something really super exciting that we're able to provide. It includes the lumber, the hooks. We provide the life jackets and the sign. And something else new this year is Spanish. We're offering our loaner board signs in both English and Spanish. So that's really exciting. And here's an example of the loaner board being built. This is from Auburn State Recreation Area. They just built the actual very first loaner board kit. And this is the Spanish side, obviously. Just want to show a couple of pictures. This is a completed one at Lodi Lake. And before we actually had the kits available, right before the 4th of July, they reached out and they wanted to do something to offer life jackets to boaters and water enthusiasts that would be visiting Lodi Lake. And so they actually just got a life jacket loan station sign and hung the life jackets up, and then they had some people monitoring it. So, you know, people can be creative with how they're loaning out life jackets and really getting that resource and access to boaters and people that are recreating on the waters. Some of the new locations for life jacket loaner stations this past year, like I mentioned, so Auburn State Recreation Area, Lodi Lake, the Sassoon City Launch Ramp, Sandy Beach Launch Ramp, and Rio Vista will be adding three new stations in the very near future. So this program is really taking off, and we're just excited to be able to offer these resources to California boaters. And then typically we do life jacket trade-ins, but again, just due to COVID-19, most of those didn't happen this past year. And but on a case-by-case basis where, you know, organizations reached out and wanted some life jackets, we were able to provide them with life jackets. Like, I work closely with Amy for the aquatic centers and getting those National Safe Boating Week resources and stuff. So hopefully those return soon, and we'll have those resources ready when everybody else, you know, when we're ready to open up a bit more. So that concludes information on life jacket outreach and loaner programs. And I actually didn't include, I'm sorry about that. Let me see if I can go back. That's okay, we just see the picture. But this year we reached out just for a different kind of opportunity for engagement with boaters, reached out to law enforcement agencies. And we actually had a really good response from the law enforcement agencies. So we worked with 24 different law enforcement agencies to get them life jackets so that they could provide these during stops or however they saw fit. But it's actually really great for them too, because it's an educational tool, but it also, you know, gives a positive engagement with boaters. So here's your ticket and a free life jacket. No, I don't know how they exactly work that out, but that was something that was pretty exciting to be able to offer. So we actually were able to provide them about 2,000 life jackets right before Memorial Day weekend. So that's pretty cool. Okay, so now I'll take any questions if anyone had any.
Okay, we'll open it up to public comment now. Megan, is there anybody registered for public comment for these reports?
I am not seeing any public comment at this time. Just going to wait a few seconds for people to raise their hands. I'm not seeing any public comments, no.
Do we have any comments or questions from the commissioners?
I just have a quick one.
Go ahead, Commissioner Perry.
I'm curious, what's the attrition rate on the lifeguard loaner program?
So I don't have actual statistics on that, but we do know a good amount do walk away the loaner stations. And, you know, that happens. And, you know, we do those other programs like the trade-ins and giveaways. And so we know that some of those walk away. So those agencies then reach out once they're running low on life jackets that don't return. And hopefully, you know, assuming we have those in our inventory, we're able to provide those back to them. That's kind of a circular answer, but I think it kind of varies depending on the location. Like these standalone loaner boards, they probably walk away more than if somebody were to, you know, get it from like an entrance kiosk or a marina, like inside a shop or something.
Yeah. Well, I suppose they're in the boating community regardless.
Yeah, that's the thought too. I mean, you know, hopefully they're taking it and using it or passing it along to somebody else that needs it.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Any other comments from commissioners? Okay, thank you, Melissa Miranda, for your presentation.
Oh, I still have a few more.
I can't see on the screen.
Sorry about that. Yep, I've got two more slides for you. This next one is on the youth boating safety education. And so under California Education Code, we are mandated to provide elementary age education on boating and water safety. And part of the way we do that is through our AquaSmart curriculum. So what you're seeing here on the screen is our AquaSmart activity book that it was redesigned a couple of years ago to meet current next generation science standards and Common Core curriculum. And previously the activity book was K through 2, and now it's K through 8, which is really awesome. So the lessons are really relevant to the different age levels. So that's something really great to be able to offer. And over the last reporting period, we were able to distribute 10,000 books, and those go to schools and then other safe voting partners. This is something that is really used as a great tool during outreach events. The Coast Guard Auxiliary and Power Squadrons really utilize this book a lot too in their outreach efforts. So that's something that we're able, here's just like a snapshot of one of the inside activities. But this book is a really great tool, and it's one of our most requested publications that we offer. And this can be ordered online, and then we can help get bulk orders out too. So if teachers or other safe voting partners request these, we're able to give them out by the case. So that's pretty cool. All right. Okay, there we go. So another way we do this is through our AquaSmart Live puppet and game show. This is a contract that we help manage with a contracted actual puppeteer. I don't do the puppets. Thank goodness for everybody. I'm not a puppeteer. But this is a really unique and exciting program that we offer, and we're able to get into schools and offer assemblies. Traditionally, these were offered in person with school assemblies. And obviously we were with COVID-19 and school shutting down. This was something, and I reported this last year, but we were able to really, really quickly pivot and get this online. And this was something that was really, such a great engaging tool and kind of a nice reprieve, I think, for teachers to be able to offer to their students over the past year. So we were able to provide 324 virtual performances, and that has an estimated reach of 87,000 students across California. So one of the benefits of doing this virtually, it's similar to, you know, our other virtual engagements, is being able to reach those areas that we might not be able to reach in the in-person times. So getting those rural areas that really need the education, but we're just not able to make it work. And then, you know, the underserved community. So anyone can request the performance, and we send out a notification. The California Department of Education actually just revamped their listing of schools, which is awesome. So we're able to use their list of, there's about 10,000 schools in California to reach out to. So we're able to reach out using that list and the emails. And so we do some e-blasts, and we've gotten really good engagement from the teachers and people really requesting this show. We are also able to do this in Spanish. So we had 30 requests for Spanish performances. So that's a really great access, something we were able to, you know, increase access on. And we were able to do some special, like, smaller shows. So I'm going to show you a very quick clip. It's a little over a minute. This is a special show that was created for social media for National Safe Voting Week. And so it just gives you a little snapshot and just a little bit of fun educational engagement.
Hello everyone, Revo the Otter here. Happy National Safe Boating Week. Now, I'd like to remind everyone to wear a life jacket whenever you're boating. Now, I've had people ask me before, they've said, Revo, why do I need to wear a life jacket? I mean, I'm in a boat, the boat floats, I've taken my swimming lessons, I'm a really good swimmer, why do I need to wear a life jacket? Well, there are many reasons, but let me show you one. Lights, camera, action!
Oh, what a beautiful day to do some sailing. Ooh, and it's getting kind of breezy, too. Hey, cut that out. Hey, cut that out. Hey, cut that out. You silly sail. Ooh. Whoa!
Glug, 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 glug. And cut! He got knocked out by the sail and fell out of the boat. And if you get knocked out, well, you're not going to remember what you learned in swimming lessons. If you get knocked out, you're not going to remember much. But if Joe were wearing his life jacket, he would have floated even if he got knocked out. You see, that's the magic of a life jacket. It keeps you floating when you can't keep yourself floating. So wear a life jacket. It'll keep you floating even if you get knocked out. It'll keep you floating even if you forget your swimming lessons. Why, even if you get too tired to swim, you'll still float if you're wearing a life jacket. So wear a life jacket whenever you are boating.
Show lasts between 15 and 20 minutes for our students, and it follows our AquaSmart rules. So not just learn to swim, learn to swim, wear a life jacket, learn to float, things like that. And so that video alone actually had over 42,000 views, which is pretty cool. We also were able to participate virtually in the Orange County Youth Summit, which thousands of fourth through sixth graders participated in. So they were also able to view that as well. So moving forward with this program, we plan to offer this both virtually and in person, you know, following public health and state local guidelines as we're able. Okay, there we go. So that's the end of that segment and my whole presentation. So I'm very happy to answer any questions. Here's my contact information. And I should have mentioned too, if anyone's interested in starting up a life jacket loan station, needs resources, has questions on life jackets, please feel free to shoot me an email. Happy to work with you. Oh, sorry, you're muted.
One more call for any public comments.
Yes, I am not seeing any at this time.
Any comments from the commissioners? So, Melissa Moran, I just had a quick question. Are you receiving any additional requests for other foreign language translations or whatever for the education program?
Like outside of Spanish requests?
Yes.
At this time, no, we haven't received any additional language requests. But that's something we'll definitely note if when we do receive those. And that's something we're very much looking forward to in the near future, hopefully translating more of our publications into Spanish and offering those. And if there's additional languages needed, by all means, please reach out to us and we're happy to provide that.
Excellent. Any other questions from commissioners?
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Melissa Miranda, for your presentation. Next, we have Vivian Matuk. We'll speak about California boating clean and green programs.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Vivian Matuk. I'm the Environmental Boating Program Manager for both the California State Parks and the California Coastal Commission, and I manage the California Boating Clean and Green Program. Due to parks transformation, our program is now part of a Interpretation and Education Division, but of course we continue to work towards satisfying DBW's goals and mission. This is a joint program between the two agencies, Parks and the Coastal Commission. Our main source of funding, is the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, $125,000 on an annual basis. The commission contributes with $30,000. And through our program, we're able to reach out to more than 10,000 boaters across the state. The Boating Clean and Green Program is a statewide boater education and technical assistance program that has been up and running since 1997. The program objectives are to educate boaters about environmentally sound boating practices, both directly and by assisting local boater education efforts, and to assist marinas and local governments in identifying the need for and in installing pollution prevention services for boaters. We have four main components, which are research, networking, technical assistance, and education and outreach. In terms of education and outreach and during this reporting period, we continue with our Dog Walker program. Dog Walkers are partners trained by our program and our program partners to conduct face-to-face voter education about clean and safe voting practices. These partners become dog walkers by attending one of our free trainings. And this year, due to COVID, we continue offering virtual trainings. We conducted 13 with 226 new participants. During the trainings, we talk about potential sources of vote pollution, state and federal laws associated to those potential sources of vote pollution, best management practices we as dog walkers can share with the voting public, and also education and outreach strategies to be able to better reach out to voters across the state. In addition, we also study our main outreach tool, which is the California Voter Kit that you can see in this slide. And actually, I coordinated for each of you commissioners to receive one of the voter kits via mail. This comprehensive packet of clean and safe voting information was developed based on research and input provided by our technical advisory group comprised of members with the Marina Industry and Boating Association, in other words, the experts. This year, we were able to distribute almost 2,000 voter kits across the state. And the voter kit, as you can see in this slide, has the ABCs of voting law, environmental voting laws, every recreational voter should know, other publications, including maps that connect voters to the marinas and the location of the pollution prevention services, as well as tools such as the fuel bib, the oil absorbent pillow, and the sheet, which are pollution prevention tools. We teach dog walkers so then they can teach voters how to use them, how to properly dispose of them, and how to get more. I'm also excited just to show you that we have a new version of our three-hole punch binder card. One side is in English, to the left of your screen, to the right is the other side, which is in Spanish. In this quick reference card to keep pollutants out of the water, voters find best management practices to prevent potential sources of boat pollution from getting into the water, as well as important phone numbers, for example, to report oil, sewage, chemical spills, entangled animals, among others. Once dog walkers are trained, then they go out and meet boaters wherever they are, including marinas, boat launch ramps, fuel docks, fishing piers, or when we're allowed, we also go to boat shows and boating events. We talk to boaters about clean and safe boating information, then dog walkers distribute the boater kit with education, and they also collect for every boater kit recipient a boater questionnaire that helps us to better orient our education and outreach effort, and also to track where the outreach is happening across the state. Based on that information, we have been able to map this information that shows you where boaters live who have learned about clean boating information from partner dog walkers and staff in 2020. And as you can see, it's a very geographically diverse map. This particular program, meaning the dog walker program, is implemented across the state with many partners, including mainly in Southern California, the Bay Foundation, which is actually one of our DVW Clean Vessel Act grantees. We also work with many marina and boating associations, also the Coast Guard Auxiliary, Power Squadrons, cities, counties, among others. Let's hear what one of our partner dog walkers in the Delta, Doc McDowell, has to say about the dog walker program.
Hello, my name is Doug, and I'm a volunteer dock walker. I sail a keel boat in the San Francisco Bay and the Sacramento Delta. One of the benefits of being a dock walker is speaking with other boaters about how to keep our waters clean. The boaters I've spoken to have enthusiastically supported and pledged to use pump-out stations, drop their used oil off at appropriate sites, and to be careful when refueling their vessels. So let's keep it clean and green. Thanks for listening.
During the reporting period, we also conducted 5 clean boating webinars and one clean and safe educational boating meeting which altogether reach over 430 participants. Participants are mainly boaters across the state, boating facility operators, also members from the general public, among others. In addition, we work with the boating safety unit and also the communications and marketing division with parks, and we implemented a virtual education and outreach campaign where one of the most important components this year was to develop 8 short 1 to 2 minute clean boating videos about clean and safe boating information. Collectively, all these videos have reached over 182,000 views in our social media platforms. From July to September last year, we also launched a 6-week clean and green online quiz where boaters were encouraged to complete 1 question per week using our social media platforms, in particular Instagram and Facebook. Based on previous years and our research, we identify for last year a goal of 4,500 quiz completions, but we're very excited to report to you, commissioners, that in just 3 weeks, we were able to exceed that goal. And at the end of the 6 weeks, we had over 5,770 quiz completions, which is fantastic because it's a great way of interacting with the boating community. This map shows where boaters live who participated in the 2020 online clean boating quiz. And as you can see, it's another great example of a geographically diverse education and outreach effort. We were also able to directly ask boaters about feedback regarding this new creative education and outreach online tool. And as you can see here in some of the feedback that we received, a lot of boaters, even though they have been boating for many years, they did learn new information, which make us really happy, of course. And they also congratulated us for thinking outside of the box with this new tool. Another component of our California Boating Clean and Green program is the California Fishing Line, a recycling program. We're very excited to report to you that this year we receive a grant from NOAA, the Marine Debris Program, to expand the program by 50 stations. So currently we have across the state 322 active fishing line recycling stations that look like the one you see right in the middle. You can find these stations at marinas, yacht clubs, boat launch ramps, entrance to parks with waterways access, among others. And thanks to this effort, and since we started the program in 2010, we have been able to collect and properly recycle more than 2,446 pounds of fishing line stretched out. That line will stretch from San Francisco to my beautiful home country, Colombia, and in particular to Rio Pure National Park. The way that we are recycling this line is basically to be used in different products, such as fishing boxes, fishing spools, among others. Another component of the program, as I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation, is technical assistance. In terms of technical assistance, we work with our colleagues with the Office of Spill Prevention and Response, and we conducted during our reporting period 2 virtual workshops about boating facilities, spill response communication, protocols, tools, and resources boating facility and boating facility operators have in case of a spill that happens inside or outside the facility. After the workshops, we requested participants to fill out an evaluation form that helped us to better orient our efforts. Both workshops were rated excellent, and boating facility operators who participated in these workshops provided great feedback for us to continue to improve these workshops in the future. Despite COVID-19, the California boating community demonstrated their commitment to continue to keep our waterways, beaches, and shorelines clean by participating in the 2020 Coastal Cleanup Day program. This event has been managed in the last 36 years by the California Coastal Commission, and our program assists the boating facilities to be part of this event. Last year, we had 26 boating facilities and boating groups participating in the event. with 300 and almost 20 volunteers who help us removing from beaches, shorelands, and waterways more than 3,600 pounds of trash and recyclables. The statewide numbers that we had last year included 14,300 volunteers who help us cleaning more than 3,000 miles of shoreline and help us removing more than 148,000 pounds of trash and recyclables. Your staff also works in partnership with Karen Deal and Debbie Holmes, managing the DBW Clean Vessel Act Education and Outreach Program. And this pretty much finalizes my presentations, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment?
I do not see anyone at this time. Just gonna give them a few seconds to raise their hand. I'm not seeing any public comments.
Do any commissioners have any questions or comments? Go ahead, Commissioner Pierre.
Thank you. Vivian, I just wanted to say that I did receive my clean boating kit. I didn't know who it came from, or I suspected it had something to do with my role as a commissioner here, but I just wanted to tell you that I thought it was a wonderful package, and it just really was very comprehensive. So I want to congratulate you on that, and thank you for sending that to me, because it'll save me a couple of bucks on buying those oil retention pads. But so is that what you said to me, is that the kit that you are now distributing?
Yes, sir. So that's the California boater kit. I'm glad that you receive it and you like it. And yes, sir. So we have been putting them together on an annual basis. Every year, we also conduct a California boater kit feedback. So when we distribute the boater kits via our education and outreach efforts, or through our partner dock walkers, we have a questionnaire that we ask boaters to fill out, as I mentioned during my presentation, to be able to collect data and better orient our education and outreach effort for the upcoming years. And we ask them if they want to give us their email so we can continue with our education and outreach via different methodology. And also we ask them for feedback about the boater kit. So we ask them for every single piece that is included in the boater kit. And boaters are always super excited to learn about the field bib, why they need to use them, how to properly dispose of them, and all the resources we have there. As I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, we put it together with input provided by our technical advisory group, comprised of members with the Marina Industry and Boating Association, as well as some of the safety organizations. So they keep telling us, hey, we need to create this brochure or this information that will help the boating community to better get access to some of the information.
Okay, thank you. I'll be sure to fill out the survey.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you again.
Any other commissioners' comments or questions? So just real quickly, I'll commend you. Your outreach efforts are really done well. To get that kind of participation is really something. I know it's really easy to do outreach. It's not as easy to get people to want to engage and participate. So I think the quiz is really amazing. And also the coastal cleanup effort is fantastic. I can't imagine the amount of trash that would still be there minus these efforts. So I really commend you on your coastal cleanup efforts as well. And I thank you. Thank you for your presentation as well.
Thank you so much. And I hope everybody participate this year in Coastal Cleanup Day. It's going to be a month effort. If you want just to participate one day, it would be specifically on September 18, but you have the opportunity to participate throughout the month, of course, safely with your friends and family. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So next on the agenda, public comment period for non-agenda items. So at this time, we'll hear public comments on items not on the agenda. Each member of the public will have 3 minutes to make his or her comment. After hearing all public comments, we will continue the meeting with agenda item 10, administrative items. Do we have, Megan, do we have anybody from names registered for non-agenda public items?
We do not have any registered comments for non-agenda items. And at the moment, I'm also not seeing any hands raised at this time. Yeah, just a reminder, if you'd like to make a comment, to please raise your hand.
But Chair Ehrman, I am not seeing any public comments.
Okay. With that, I'm going to formally close the public comments and we'll move on to agenda item 10, which is administrative items. Ramona, do we want to, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I don't think we have any administrative items. Just confirm our future meeting dates.
Do we want to touch on the upcoming conference with the role of the commission will be at the conference?
Yes, would you like to, or?
I will, we at the last meeting, we talked about possibly rescheduling our next commission meeting to go to coincide with the MRA conference in San Diego, the Marine Recreation Association conference. And then we determined based on attendance that that would not be possible. So now we're going to proceed with having myself and Commissioner Murillo, along with DW Department of Waterway Commission staff, will attend the conference, and we'll actually have a public workshop. And do we have we narrator determined finalized date and time, okay. Ramona?
Narrator with narrator exiting narrator.
Not sure what's going on there, but so tentatively, I do believe that the workshop is going to be October 11th in the afternoon. We're trying to pinpoint that time frame to ensure that the MRA conference, there isn't other things going on. So, I mean, obviously the goal of this workshop is to allow for the boating organizations that will be at the conference to, you know, to attend this public workshop. So, tentatively, I think we're looking at, 3:45 to 4:45 mm-hmm. time frame on October 11th.
And that'll be a part, I'm sure, in a destination to be determined within the conference area.
Yes, correct. There, it will be in there.
Ramona, can I just ask a question? Yes. Was this set up as an ad hoc committee for those two commissioners?
This was,
are you noticing the workshop?
We will be noticing the public meeting, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
And to kind of reiterate, Mona, unless I'm mistaken, the intent is to kind of interact with the voting community to gather ideas to move forward for future meetings and the refinement of our ad hoc committees, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I think the goal there, yes, is for the commission to kind of, we'll hear from the voting organization, and I think, primarily would be for next steps on our on how we're going to communicate or engage with the voting community and commission for us on for our sustainability of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund as was indicated on the budget bill language. I think this kind of is initial sets initial meeting with the public on hearing the voting community's perhaps ideas, concerns, or areas that of interest of them of how we can, add to the proposal or be part of the discussions for the fix of the fund. So as was mentioned, I think on my presentation, it was some of the things mentioned were, you know, vessel registration increase. And as you all know that the vessel increase did not move forward with the increase this year. So what that will look like in future years and other revenue opportunities, whether, you know, I'll throw out there non-motorized or, you know, the aquatic invasive program, which we've heard from the voting community of why just the boaters are being taxed or are having to pay for that efforts in the Delta. And as I mentioned in my report, we are, you know, getting general fund to support that aquatic invasive program, but it is only for, you know, the 2 years. So we'll have to come up with a proposal by 2023 budget proposal for the budget to come up with a proposal to move forward with sustainability on that fund. So I think the goal there again is, you know, I think voting organizations participate and attend MRA. So it just kind of gives us an idea of what what the thinking is out there in the boating community. And then I think the goal would be for our November regular meeting. And again, I'm not sure because of the ever-changing rules on COVID of where we will be, at whether we continue on with the virtual or in-person meetings, that we would have a workshop the day before our meeting in November. We would have a facilitator from the department, and then we would gather up the information that we received from this initial meeting, and then the commission then would have a day as well with us on that workshop of kind of starting to formalize, you know, areas that we would want to look at moving forward on sustaining the fund. And then we would have our regular meeting on the next day after the workshop.
And Ramona, as it stands right now, we are precluded from having hybrid meetings, correct? It's not permissible?
As I understand, and I'm gonna, Catherine, as I understood last, is that we were in law that we either had to have through the executive order from the governor that would end September 30th. And then we would resume in person October. That's how it stands as of now. But, you know, with this, I'm just saying, you know, with the Delta variant in us kind of moving back, we are now required to wear masks in, and depending on the county, obviously, that you live in, you know, indoors, mask regardless of whether you're vaccinated or not is because of the Delta variant. So, you know, as of right now, I think that it has to either be it can't be a hybrid. But I suspect that could change possibly to either a hybrid or we go back to a virtual. I'm just, and again, that's nothing that I've heard. It's just, you know, seeing of where we are today with the Delta variant.
Commissioner Aaron, were you thinking about what kind of hybrid meeting were you thinking about?
I was just curious as the ability to, we had talked in the past of possibly having the commission in unison and then holding a Zoom meeting, but if in a sense, are you at least doing the tour? We talked about doing the tour as just the commission and holding the Zoom meeting, but as of right now, my understanding was it was kind of all in person or all online.
Yeah, I think Ramona's correct in what she said, but that's something that we could certainly consider, you know, trying to work out or look for something if the governor reissues the order, or if we go back to just the regular meetings. I do think that we would always want the commission to be together in one spot. But I do think that both, I do two commissions, OHV and this commission. And I have to say, I think it's really increased our attendance to be on Zoom and have people from all over the state be able to participate without travel. So.
Yeah, we definitely have noticed on ours as well, Catherine, of the participants. I looked when we were on this call of the participants there, and there's quite a bit more than we would normally see in person at our meetings.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Any other agenda administrative items?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Commissioner Pierre.
This may talk about an administrative item, but it sort of dovetails on sort of eventually getting back to sort of interacting more in person with the public. I don't know what the practice is with the state, but like my daughter is on the youth commission. She's 15 years old. And after she got appointed about a week later, she got these really nice business cards that say City and County of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So when she goes in out and interacts with the public, as I just did with the chief of the lifeguards out in Newport Beach, she's just not walking in and saying, hi, you don't know me, but you know, and so, like I say, it's an administrative item. But I think as we start getting more in person with stuff, I think it would be very helpful just being able to reach out to the community and, I don't know, getting letterhead with their names on it or something like that, if that's possible. But, you know, I want to sort of talk to the guys in the Coast Guard down here and understand what their safety programs are on the bay and so forth. And it's just very difficult to do that in a professional manner if I'm just saying, hi, I'm Tom Pierre, you don't know me. So that's an administrative item like none other. I talked to Megan about it a little bit. I guess there's some problems with the state in getting that kind of stuff done. But anyways, I think it would be beneficial for all of us so we can just be a little, as they say, more professional.
I will make one comment on the letterhead, and that is that although you could do that on your own computer, you can't send a letter just by yourself, because that would reflect, that would look like the commission was sending that letter. In a letter on your own letterhead, you can certainly say you are a member of the commission, but that you are not acting on behalf of the commission. I on the cards, I think that got cut a few years ago on just a, you know, expense basis. Ramona may know better than me, but that's something that, you know, if commissioners wanted to pay for their own cards, that might be something that we could look into.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not fine with that.
And although I do agree with your point, it does make it seem a little bit, you know, it's easier to have a card.
Yeah. Well, and I really appreciate your comments on reaching out to people and that distinction between, oh, I'm reaching out as a commissioner or an individual on the commission. And I think that that is a subtlety, but I don't think that was really clear to me before. So I really appreciate your comments on that, Catherine. So, but, you know, just send me an invoice and I'm happy to pay. I mean, once I've got my own law business cards that I use all the time, and, you know, they're helpful, but that's my legal business and not what this commission is. So just my thoughts.
We can look
at. Be careful what you ask for, Tom. My first boss, Congressman Van Dierlin, when he put me in charge of his office in Washington, the first thing I did, I got cards. He came in, he saw them on my desk. He said, simple question, how do you like phone calls on Monday mornings? I said, I don't. I think they're still locked up in the Rayburn building.
Yeah.
haven't used them since.
Commissioner Pierre, I'll definitely look into the business card there, because I vaguely remember that, Catherine, of the when we were going through cuts. But I'll definitely check into it. So I know we have a reprographics department within the department. So, and there is a template that they may be able to use. So I'll find out and let you all know.
It's a minor point, but just, I think it would be helpful for all of us. But thank you very much, both, everyone.
Any other administrative items? How about suggested items for the next meeting? No suggested items. Then we will move to a motion to adjourn.
Commissioner, Chairman Ehrman, you don't really need a motion to adjourn if you don't want to do one. You can simply say, you know, if I don't hear any objections, we're adjourned. But
perfect.
That's up to you.
No, that's. Hearing no objections, then this motion is adjourned. This meeting is adjourned. I'm stuck on the motion.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you all. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.